This particular verse is a popular verse for Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavat Sandarbha. It's quoted many times, and it's involved in very extensive commentaries. So I'm not sure whether to go through this pages and pages and pages and pages of Bhagavat Sandarbha, or to get back to just the flow of chapter 37, or somewhere in between. Pages and pages and pages. It's elevated subject matter that for devotees that like to hear rigorous analysis and philosophical discussion of a certain point, then you'll love it. And for those of you that want to get back to the story, you'll cross your fingers and hope I just get back to the story and keep it simple. Probably do something else in between. It's a lot. So you'll get a sample for this morning. So here's Canto 10, Chapter 37, Text 22. 10:37:22. This is Narada speaking to Krishna. And as you recall, Narada understands many things. And one of those is he understands Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are about to wind up. And he's playing a role in the winding up of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. And gesturing towards Mathura, and then after Mathura, the rest of his earthly pastimes of killing the demons and protecting the devotees and so forth. So he speaks a number of verses. First he speaks glorification, 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 and it's a wonderful analysis of that glorification. In simple terms, there's Krishna's form, which he's seeing directly before him, his Swarup. And his Swarup has different qualities, which are non-different than his Swarup. So he's the primary and then secondary. The qualities are secondary because they're resting upon his form, or his personal form. And after that glorification, glorification, he speaks of all living entities are by nature dependent upon him, and especially the devotees are feeling dependent upon him, and they're feeling fear because of demons. And because you reciprocate with your devotees everywhere, and all living entities everywhere, I long to see the day when you'll go to Mathura and do this and that and then the other thing and the other thing. And he describes the sequence of Krishna's pastimes. And then this verse, text 22, is back to offering prayers. Glorification of Krishna Tattva. Krishna's before him. It's not abstract, or it's simply notional. He's addressing what he understands as the source of everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the translation of 22 reads, "Let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity." Note that Satchitananda, he's just saying that in more poetic language. You are Satchitananda Vigraha. Your will is never thwarted. You have already achieved all possible desirable things. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. Now, the commentary that we're going to be discussing, Bhagavad Sandarbha, it is illuminating, we discussed yesterday, it's continuing, Sva Mayaya. So, what's the relation between Krishna's Maya potency, you know, what we're very familiar with, what illusion is, and how the illusory potency is, Krishna is aloof from it by his spiritual potency. But all of that is unpacking with just the word Maya is used in the verse. If you look up the verse, you can see Maya is there in the verse. So what is the meaning of this Maya? And we should understand that Maya is inert. Illusion can't cover people unless Krishna empowers Maya to cover people through his spiritual shakti, the power of your spiritual energy. He remains aloof, and he can, by contact with him, others can also become aloof. And if you become aloof from Maya, it's good news. Satchitananda becomes your life, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Not just, you know, you feel good. It's Satchitananda Vigraha. Your spiritual life is restored. Bliss, Ananda. You know, emphasis on bliss, but it's full cognition and understanding your eternal existence. You know, Brahma Bhuta. Prasanatma. Nasochati Nakam. So it's by Krishna's spiritual potency that happens. So that's the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's spiritual potencies and the potency of illusion. You know, this is a continuation from yesterday's discussion. So, Jiva Goswami writes, in this verse, Maya refers to the Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti means internal potency, chit and achit. So there's Satchit Ananda, that's part of his internal potency, and the big, a broad name is Antaranga Shakti, or Chit Shakti, or spiritual potency. So in this case, Maya refers to the Chit Shakti, and he gives the reason, since Maya, meaning illusion, would be contrary to the intention of the speaker. Sridhar Swami explains the word Yogamaya as Chit Shakti. Now, somebody hearing yesterday's class from India sent a question by email, and in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the word Atma Maya. By his Atma Maya, he appears. Is that the same as this internal potency? Well, the internal potency is a big umbrella, and under the big umbrella, or you know, the bucket or you know, category, it says internal potency, and there's many, 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 many. So under that Chit Shakti, there's many, many, like Yogamaya. And then so many other internal potency nomenclatures. And they do different things. So as Atma Maya by which he appears, that's one of those internal potencies. Yogamaya is another, and et cetera, et cetera. nomenclature is not always consistent. It's not like every time chit shakti means this, and therefore it doesn't mean that. You know, don't be so rigid. But because the use of it is not so rigid, it has a connotation, and then context may refine that connotation in a different context. So we're to understand this verse that we're looking at, text 22. Narada is expressing that Krishna, by his chit shakti or swarup shakti or his internal potency or spiritual energy, remains aloof from the qualities of illusion, the gunas, because illusion has qualities, this flavor, that flavor. By his spiritual potency, he remains eternally aloof, and that means the implication is, by his contact with his devotees, they're also aloof. And part of the issue that he's addressing, we discussed yesterday, is the fear of Kamsa. So go take care of that fear, because that's an unnecessary emotion for the devotee. You go rescue them by your spiritual potency. So now, Bhagavad Sandarbha now continues to elaborate, this is my comment here, continues to elaborate on the meaning of this verse with specific focus on the relationship between Maya and the Lord's Swarup Shakti. That's the topic this morning. Okay, so now the first reference, using his methodology, he makes a reference to 12.12.69, Bhagavatam. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the son of Vyasa, Dev Shukadev Goswami. This is Sutta speaking. Who destroys all sin? How does Sukadev destroy sin? Well, he just gives the message of the Bhagavatam, and that destroys all sin. He is an instrument for Krishna to destroy sin. And who, though fixed in his own bliss with no distractions, that's this Brahmasukha, he is a Brahman-realized person, became attracted to the pastimes of Krishna and mercifully spread the Bhagavatam, which describes Krishna and reveals the rasa of his pastimes. That's Sutta speaking. And that's to illustrate it's by his spiritual potency that illusion is driven far away for him and for those who hear about him, because the Bhagavatam is not different than him. So persons become relieved from illusion and the consequences of illusion. That's good news, isn't it? Continuing, this is one Anuchet out of, it's a long section. Bhagavan's activities is the headline. Doubt. What? Krishna says, but attaining birth and activities means that it happens at a certain time. Or some reader may doubt, wait a minute. He has pastimes like birth and other activities. So you say he's eternal, but birth and activities happen within time. So please explain. Answer. He attains these eternally, anukalam, and never gives them up. The Swarup Shakti produces cause and effect together. So this is back to the theme of text 22. How does he dispel illusion? And he's free from illusion. He does it by his spiritual potency, because spiritual potency simultaneously produces cause and effect. Out there is illusion. Over here is Krishna. And the illusion is activated by his spiritual potency. Otherwise, the whole thing collapses. He has to sanction illusion, otherwise there can't be any. And he can withdraw illusion. Right? Sarvashacham riddhi sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam. So forgetfulness can't happen without Krishna. Remembrance can't happen without Krishna. So what about this forgetfulness? What about illusion? You know, good stuff and bad stuff. You know, why would God do that? Or he does it by his spiritual potency. This is how. And he can withdraw it. But it's dependent upon the living entity's attitude towards him. He'll extend illusion or withdraw illusion, depending their attitude towards him. What do they want? I want illusion. Okay. I learned this from our ISKCON youth and also the college students. Some years ago, there was a movie, popular movie, called The Matrix. Maybe you've heard the title of the movie. So the movie is advertised by two hands extending. There's a red pill and a blue pill or something like that. And one's the reality pill and the other's the illusion pill. And of course the guy wants, you know, I want reality. And then the reality is not pleasant. It's a scary place. The illusion pill is, it's a nice place. But, you know, the source of reality and illusion is the same. And in the illusion part, there's cause and effect. And the cause and effect is produced by Krishna's sort of shakti. Or that is to say, illusion is animated by his spiritual potency. Otherwise, you don't have illusion. You don't have even creation. You don't have nothing. You don't even have Brahman. You just have nothing. You're a Buddhist. But if you're over here in the illusion category, then you can't see Krishna, and all you see is cause and effect, and his spiritual potency is simultaneously the cause of both. Now over here, we're going to hear some more, but his birth and activities, they're eternal. There's no cause and effect. There's no touch of illusion. It's Leela. It's in another category. That's the reality pill. Question. How can birth and activities be eternal? They are activities. Action is accomplished by a sequence of parts from beginning to end. Without that, action's very nature would be destroyed. Like, what's an eternal action? That's a good question. It's inconceivable. It's not. We don't have any experience of things that have, it takes time. Then there's sequences of events that, then you have an event. Answer. Mrs. Jiva Goswami, Bhagavat Sandarbha. This is not a fault. Since the Lord's forms are always eternal, the manifestations of his form are eternal, the pastimes like birth and activities are eternal. And the manifestations of the spiritual world and material world of his places and associates in unlimited universes and unlimited Vaikunthas are eternal. Whoa. Though his birth and activities appear and disappear with beginning and end, in some places, portions of his birth and activities end, and in other places, they do not end. And in other places, they begin. Since there is no break in continuity of their performance, the birth and activities exist eternally. Sometimes they are slightly different because of different details And sometimes they are exactly the same because of the same details. One form alone performs actions separately in different manifestations. Like when Narada visited Dwarka. One form displayed different things at the same time. At different times of the day. At the same time. One form. This is Narada's intention in saying in this verse, Chitram Bhattaitad Ekena Vapusha. How astonishing! In one form he performed activities in each palace, in different manifestations, where the actions take place, there is a different identity, that is, of Krishna and his associates. Since separate action takes place, this being the case, the manifestation of rasa generated by the sequence of pastimes is experienced in each place. So there's the birth and the activities, and then the experience of those who are in Krishna's company or association, and they're experiencing his birth and activities. And they're experiencing through rasa. And that rasa is generated by Krishna's presence and remembrance of him. And so there's a rasa from the receiver, though the participants in his activities. Question. How can his birth and activities be one since they begin separately in different manifestations? Answer. There's oneness of the same action arising at different times. Even Shankara in his commentary says, quote, when one says the word cow twice, one does not perceive two different words, but one. The logic is Krishna and Krishna and Krishna, so it's one Krishna. And because you're saying Krishna, 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 or different, you know, the pastime of birth, the pastime of birth, or whatever it is, the Dwarka pastime, and then another Dwarka pastime in this universe or in multiple universes, it's one. That's the logic that's being used. It is correct to say that the birth and activities are eternal. In the agamas, what are the agamas? The agamas are texts within the four Vedas that describe procedure for worship. And it's the agamas are texts that the Vaishnavas have high regard for. The Narada Pancharatra is an example. And that's the primary source for the Gaudiya line of deity worship and other rituals. It's a text within the Vedas that describes rituals. Commonly it's about worship. So, in the agamas, there are prescriptions for meditating on pastimes which happened in the past. But the pastimes are eternal. Quoting Madhvacharya's commentary, quote, it is proper to gather vamana and the other forms in meditation, since everything related to the Lord is eternal. Then a quote from the Upanishads, Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. The Lord was present in the past, is present now, and will be present in the future. So he's drilling down on how do you have eternal pastimes? How do you justify How do you think of what is an eternal pastime? So he's going deeply into that topic, Bhagavat Sandarbha topic. From the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad verse, here's some Sanskrit. Upa samharya tvam. Upa samharya tvam means that it is proper to gather all forms during meditation. The Lord's birth is different from material birth. It is an appearance of the Lord which resembles a material birth. Sometimes it is not similar to a material birth also, such as Purusha Sukta, unborn, he is born in many ways. I mean, like Lord Varaha comes from the nostril of Brahma. That's not a normal birth. Nrisingadeva comes from a pillar. That's not a normal birth. Matsya comes from the little minnow in a pond. That's not a normal birth. So sometimes and sometimes not. He's not dependent upon anything. Further reference, this is from the prayers within the prison house of Kamsa, chapter 3 of Canto 10. Then the Lord, complete with all his expansions, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, responding to the request of his devotees, appeared from Devaki. Non-different from the Lord, that's Devaki, in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. And there's another reference, Canto 7, Chapter 8. This is the Prahlad pastime, where the translation of the verse reads, this is the appearance of Lord Nrisingadeva, to prove the words of his servant that he is present in all objects, to be true, the Lord showed an astonishing form, which is neither animal nor human, to the assembly. And then Canto 3, Chapter 24, this is describing the appearance of Lord Kapiladeva. After a long time, the Supreme Lord Madhusudana, who is like fire in wood, controlled by the strength of bhakti of Kardama, made his appearance. Commentary, by the power of Kardama's bhakti, the avatar Kapila appeared in this manner. The word virya or semen is used only because this is well known for producing a son. The activity is different from material birth, being a pastime of the Lord's bliss in his swarup. The philosophers say, loka vat tu lila kai valyam. The Lord's pastimes, this is the translation of that, from Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. The Lord's pastimes, without motive, he has no motive to perform when he performs a pastime or to fulfill. His pastimes appear similar to actions in this world. In this world, a madman, out of his intense bliss, dances without a particular motive. Similarly, the Lord acts without motive. Not that he's a madman. Then there's this reference. In this example, the madman is ignorant. One should not imply that the Lord is ignorant. Rather, the example is used to show that the Lord enacts pastimes without considering his goal, but simply out of great inherent bliss. So then comes the reference from Narayana Samhita, quote, without a goal, the Lord carries out creation out of bliss alone, like a madman dancing. What is the question of a goal for the Lord, who is complete bliss? Persons who are liberated have no desire to be fulfilled. What then to speak of the desire of the Lord, the soul of all beings? Commentary continues, similarly, one could not find fault with the example of inhaling and exhaling. This is natural. But in deep sleep, the person is also unaware of inhaling and exhaling, whereas the Lord is always aware. Thus, the Lord's pastimes arise from the natural bliss of his swarup. In the Mandukya Upanishad, it says the same. The act of creation is the nature of the Lord. For one whose desires are fulfilled at all times, what desire does he have? Commentary continues. If the Lord's actions in relation to creation of the universe are unmotivated, then what can one say about his actions in Vaikuntha? He's a lawyer building a case. The pastimes are eternal, and the pastimes are without cause, material cause. Just bliss, pastime. So here's a reference from Canto 10, Chapter 16. Oh, Lord Rishikesh, Master of the senses, please let us offer our obeisances unto you, whose pastimes are beyond matter, whose pastimes are proclaimed everywhere, unto you who are Atmarama, but not Atmarama. Then we go with our contradictory statements. Commentary continues. The attraction of Shukadeva and others for the Lord's pastimes without material motive is therefore commendable. The nature of the Lord's birth is understood in the following verse from the chapter on the mystery of the Lord's birth. That's Canto 1, Chapter 3. Chapter 3, Canto 1, the list of incarnations. Text 35 reads, quote, thus, rejecting the two versions of the universal form, the wise glorify the highest subject of the Vedas, namely the birth and the activities of the Supreme Lord, who resides in the hearts of all beings, unlike the universal form, who has no material birth and no material activities, unlike the jiva. So that was text 35, and then he's going to go back and say the previous two verses to 35 read, when the gross and subtle material forms, which are impositions on the soul in ignorance, are removed by the realization of the devotees, one can realize Brahman. When Maya, or ignorance, weakens, the Lord bestows his mercy on the jiva. The jiva becomes endowed with this treasure. The wise understand that, being situated in this glorious position, this person is worthy of worship. One more line here. One attains Brahman by direct knowledge of one's swarup, caused by negation of the gross and subtle coverings created by ignorance. when Maya ceases, our realization, one realizes the wealth of one's Swarup. And that's it for this morning. So this connects with something that we heard yesterday. This is a long, but it's explanation, but it's all about the nature of Bhagavan. And everything rests on his form. Same as what Narada said in the very first part of his speaking to Krishna and Braja. Your form is everything. And your form has attributes or qualities. This quality, that quality, the other quality. And it's all resting on your form. And so those are features of your Swarup Shakti, because they're your Shakti, they're non-different than you. The qualities of Krishna are non-different than Krishna. And they're manifest by his Swarup Shakti, his potency. They're features of his potency. And that potency, Swarup Shakti, also animates ignorance. But the ignorance doesn't touch Krishna because of his Swarup Shakti. And it doesn't touch those who are in connection with him because of his Swarup Shakti. We're protected. It even speaks like this, from moment to moment, his pastimes in Vrindavan are protecting the residents of Vrindavan from illusion. Or, even us. If we become immersed in the internal potency, that's the internal potency for us, is bhakti. Bhakti is bhakti shakti. It's has the power to protect us. But it's Krishna's power, not our power. Krishna's power protects us. If we just stay in this, what's bhakti? Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. That's what bhakti is. And there's what it isn't and there's what it is. And there's a potency of bhakti that connects us with Krishna, and we're protected from illusion. And we can then understand real happiness. There's the Brahma Sukha, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. That's the happiness of Brahman realization. But keep going. Nasochati nakangsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Devotional service begins. So you can connect with Brahman happiness, as that's what's being said here. The happiness of knowing our Swarup, or at least minimally the coverings of illusion gone, then there's a happiness of Brahman realization, along with not identifying with the features of illusion. Say it in reverse. What's the cause of suffering? Ignorance. So kick out ignorance and you won't suffer. And what's that ignorance? It's identifying with what we're not. And we suffer. And, we struggle and we suffer and so forth. Daviyesha guna mayi mamamaya duratyaya. We struggle. Duratyaya. But mam eviye papadyante mayam etam taranti. We can cross beyond very, very easily. So, I have to make a decision about continuing, because it would be several days of going through this, because he's on a roll. He wants his reader to understand how connecting with Krishna. It's not Bhakti Sandarbha. Bhakti Sandarbha is much longer. This is just understanding Bhagavan. And following the understanding of Bhagavan, following Sambandha, comes bhakti. And it's through bhakti one can understand Bhagavan, but he's laying out what's with Bhagavan. And how his energies work. Parasya Shakti Virvadaiva Shruyate Sabhaviki Gyanabala Kriyacha, commonly quoted verse. That's Bhagavan. And through Bhagavan, so many things happen in this material realm and the spiritual realm, but it's by his potency those things happen. And everything hinges upon how we have regard for him. So we can be pious and say, God is good and God is great. And then you can be more than pious and have an understanding of how great he is. And then more impetus for, with full understanding, taking shelter of him. Okay, so we'll close with that. 17 minutes after the hour. Let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, as you're speaking about this illusion that's animated because of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, and whenever he wants, he can withdraw. And the last message that you were giving, we try and try and struggle and suffer. Somehow I was feeling, though I kind of theoretically understand Krishna has the power to, you know, relieve us from suffering, I have to take shelter. But there is some kind of independent, endeavor or struggle, which I understand we have to do from our side, in order to qualify us to be able to take that shelter. But in that effort, when there is sometimes more focus, more sincerity, and there is other times less, I think my question is, it seems like I got it and then it goes off. Why is that? Probably because of our conditioning. What is one thing, in spite of this unsteadiness, to keep going on that?
We discussed this yesterday. In short, you can listen to yesterday's class. It was a little longer. Maya is clinging to us and we're clinging to Maya. That's why. Maya didn't let us go. Why doesn't Maya let us go? She can let us go. Because our bhakti is weak. And so, okay, we get close to Krishna. We start doing, you know, not nice things in the presence of Krishna. You can't get close to Krishna unless you're clean. So she doesn't let us go. Mayam cha tadapashayam. You know the verse from Vyasadeva's realization. Maya is under his control. When he saw Krishna, Maya was behind him, under his control. But so she can just like let us go. But she doesn't. She's doing her job. You know, so it's like a prison warden doesn't let prisoners go here and there. They say, oh, you know, I'm reformed. But, you know, history shows us you let the prisoner out of the jail. They go out and do the same thing again because tendency is still there. But the purpose of the prison is not just detention, it's correction. So we're in that correction zone. We're attached and Maya's clinging to us too. She's doing her job. And then we have to become squeaky clean. Or Krishna can also just intervene. He can do that. With Putana and others, he did. So we're ready for his intervention. But you know, they're not so fortunate, like Putana was fortunate. We should cultivate anukulyena, favorable We're not there yet. So it's intermittent. The unsteady bhakti is for that reason. In the form, you know, from another perspective, from the anartas in the heart, there's a tendency that's a long-standing tendency and doesn't go away quickly. So that's why. That's why the unsteadiness is there. We're being held accountable. We have to hold ourselves accountable for our past misuse of free will. That's another way of saying, I'm accountable. It's not just, okay, I'm ready to go. We're accountable. Because tendency is behind that freedom. You get out of jail and go do bad stuff again. Back in jail. Tendency. Residual tendency. Accumulated tendencies. Inimical tendencies. Something else? Go ahead.
It's not directly related, Guru Maharaj. We were discussing about this, why bad things happen to good people, and then with the Bhagavad Gita reading group, and then this question came up. If everyone does good karma, do they all get human birth, and won't it imbalance the ecosystem?
Don't worry, it won't happen. But theoretically, yeah. You know, they just empty out the universe. Not just good karma, but, you know, empty out the universe. Then you don't need it anymore. So go the other direction. Bad karma. And so it's overpopulation, right? Okay. Either of you? No? Okay.
This question is from Sucharita Mataji.
Go ahead.
To progress in Krishna Bhakti, I heard you say many times to associate with those who are already doing better in terms of their sadhana. By associating with them, I might benefit in making progress. Will it be detrimental to them to associate with me?
No, you're a good sadhaka. You're there for every class with a question from every class. You're hearing nicely, so you're a good association. Okay?
And
getting better all the time.
This question is from Rupa Vilas Prabhu. As you mentioned, there are many names for internal potency, such as Atma Maya. So, what is the Sanskrit name for the umbrella of all internal potencies?
Chit Shakti. Next.
This is
Swarup Shakti is another term that they're interchangeable. It's from a different perspective, but this is the same umbrella term. Go ahead.
This is from Urja Mataji. Lord Krishna knows his purpose of coming to Vrindavan and killing Kamsa also. Are there any reasons Sri Narada Muni reminding the Supreme Lord to go to Mathura? What lessons can I learn from here?
Krishna was having a blast. He was so immersed that he paused on, oh, I have to go kill the other demons. Because he was experiencing, he who is unlimited was experiencing special bliss being with the residents of Vrindavan. That's the reason. And what, you know, practical application? Don't be so caught in bliss you forget what your service is.
Amara Mataji's question. Illusion does not have the power to cover us unless Krishna empowers the illusory potency.
Yes.
I'm struggling to understand why would Krishna want us to forget him?
Krishna doesn't want us to forget him.
We are depending on him for his remembrance. The Tatastha Jiva will take shelter in Maya if he can see Maya only, being dependent on what Krishna shows. Is it Jiva's first desire to enjoy separate from Krishna that's causing this?
Yes. And it continues and continues and continues. That's why.
This was a question from Sandhya Mataji yesterday regarding the analogy of snake shedding its skin and moves away.
Mm.
And it has no connection with it whatsoever.
Mm.
And how it applies to relationship between Krishna and his illusory potency.
Mm.
So she was connecting from Vyasadeva's vision that Maya is there with Krishna, behind Krishna.
Yes.
And also, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyate Cha Saracharam. So is it correct to think Maya is constantly engaged by Krishna? We have countless living entities taking birth every moment. So there's constant association between Maya and Krishna.
Well, it's not association exactly. She moves according to the indication of Krishna, but there's not contact. They've got a radar system going on. He doesn't have to contact her. He just sends a signal and she knows what to do. And it's actually, it's Supersoul that sends a signal. It's Krishna's expansion as Supersoul that does it. But we can say it's Krishna. We can say it's Supersoul. It's Supersoul. That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.